I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Washington's superintendent of public instruction doesn't think it matters how many sexual partners teens have. Plus, President Donald Trump once again threatens to move the World Cup from Seattle. And Democrats in Olympia are obsessed with lowering criminal penalties for sex predators. It's weird, isn't it? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. I would also love to have you join us on Sunday for a super signer rally for the two Let's Go Washington initiatives, one to protect parental rights, the other one to protect girls' sports. I'll be at Cougar Mountain Middle School at the gymnasium in Issaquah from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. Again, that's this Sunday, November 23rd. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I've been talking about the event we're going to have on Sunday, one of many super signer events that Let's Go Washington is hosting around the state to try to get back parental rights when it comes to parents having a say over what's happening with their kids at school, the other one to protect girls' sports. And I think it's particularly relevant, given the story we're going to start the show with today, for you to support those efforts, even if you've already signed, to show up, be there, make sure people understand that the silent majority exists and we're not going to be silent anymore. I had a totally different plan for the show today, and then Nicole let me know about a tip that we got about an email that went out to districts, school districts across the state. And I said, all right, we got to upend the show. We're going to start with talking about Trump and World Cup, but this is just too damn unbelievable. And there are a lot of things that the government does, right, that I disagree with, but I can pinpoint the motivation behind it. Even if the motivation is stupid, I at least know why they're doing it. And so in Washington State, the Democrats in the majority, I can at least like be like, oh, you know, they're talking about politics in classrooms because they're trying to raise the future generation of Democratic voters. And I can pinpoint some sort of stupid or dark motivation. I don't know the motive behind this. And I know that some of you are going to be screaming at your screen saying they're child predators, but am I left with a different motive? I want there to be a different motive, okay? I want there to be a different motive. I don't want to be that person who says it's not rocket science, they just want to diddle the kids. But I really struggle in this instance to find out what the motivation is. So every month, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction has been pushing out these sexual health education resources. It goes to all the districts, all the teachers, all the staff. And we've talked about them before, mostly because they're usually just obsessed with trans ideology. It's supposed to be sex ed and sex health resources for schools to help kids with. But it was like all about gender and trans. And so we've talked about these emails in that context before. But the one sent out for November 2025 is really a doozy. So this is what the emails look like. It says sexual health education news and resources. And then it has this note on there. And this really bothers me to the core because this is the note that they're going to use to excuse anything that comes after it. It says, note, resources are provided for informational purposes and not as recommendations from OSPI. Resources referenced here may be for educators or parents and may not be intended for use in the classroom. We recommend reviewing all educational materials for alignment with district policy and state law before using with students. Articles and other resources are provided for informational purposes and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and policies of OSPI. Then why are you sending them out in an email with the OSPI logo on it? And if they might not be in line with state law or district policy, maybe you ought to figure that out before you send it out to all the school districts. Don't you think? So no, this does not absolve you. You are Chris Reichdahl, responsible for everything that's sent out in those emails and for whatever teachers might decide to do with some of the links to the quote-unquote sexual health information that you include. In this particular email, it included links, again, under the sexual health education headline. One of them is to an article written October 16th of this year by the Healthy Teen Network, and the article is titled, It's Bananas, Why the Sexual Exposure Chart Belongs in the Bin. So we had a school staffer who got this saw that, clicked on it, read it, thought, oh my God, Brandi Cruz needs to know about this, sent it to us. So here's what that link takes you to. Buckle up, buttercups. Takes you to this article written by a guy named Nicholas Serfrinko. It's headlined, It's Bananas, Why the Sexual Exposure Chart Belongs in the Bin. Peeling back this common clinic visual shows how judgy junk data sometimes gets disguised as science. So in it, it basically is trying to dismantle a very common notion that, at least when I was a kid, you were taught in real sex ed. That, like, hey, you might trust your sexual partner, but do you trust everyone your sexual partner has been with? Do you know everyone's sexual health that your sexual partner has been with? And it's this idea that is true that when you sleep with someone, if you don't practice safe sex especially, you're basically sleeping with every person that person slept with. And that's an important concept for kids to understand, but not according to this guy. There's two graphics in here that he uses to try to illustrate this story. According to some, your last hookup exposes you to thousands of strangers. In real life, how you hook up matters more than how many you hook up with. And it has all these information about using condoms and PrEP to prevent HIV exposure and other medication and testing. Now, I'm not arguing with the notion that safe sex matters, right? But safe sex isn't a panacea. Condoms aren't a panacea. Taking a PrEP medication isn't a panacea. And yes, the concept that, you know, as a teenager, you might have your first love and it's the only person that you've slept with, but do you know who they've slept with? Do you know the sexual histories of the person? This is about teaching kids responsibility and really understanding that they could be unknowingly exposing themselves to a variety of things. Now, this is where this gets really strange. So this guy, again, and this is sent out to all teachers and staff and public schools in the whole state, this guy's arguing that it's junk science, you know, to suggest that, you know, the number of sexual partners your sexual partner has had matters. This graphic in this article says this: body count is propaganda. Body count is propaganda. And body count is a phrase that more young kids are starting to use. Body count referring, no, not to how many people you've murdered, because that's what I always thought body count was, how many people you slept with. He says, body count is propaganda. And he writes, simply put, the sexual risk exposure chart, born of failed abstinence only and risk avoidance tactics, is chartaganda of the worst kind. Regressive, slut-shaming, pseudoscientific, fascist propaganda that I, for one, am not falling for. Bananas then and bananas now. Mushy math and rotten subtext fit for nothing but a trash bin. Hold on a second. There's a lot to digest there. Fascist propaganda? So now, warning kids about the dangers of having too many sexual partners is fascist propaganda. I'd really like to understand how you came to that conclusion. And also, this is a much different sentiment. Can you go back to that first side-by-side graphic? So in this one, talking about if this was it, and it's like, hey, safe sex matters, right? So if you use safe sex, you can protect yourself from maybe all the sexual partners that your partner has had before them. You can do a better job protecting yourself. I might not be so mad about it. But this is an entirely different thing if you go back to the next one, Nicole. Body count itself is propaganda. So no, it doesn't matter how many people you sleep with. And we're talking about teenagers here. This article is written by a guy with the Healthy Teen Network. This is specifically sex advice for teenagers. For teenagers, okay? Saying body count is propaganda. And this is sent out to every public school district in the state, in a state where there's a lot of very liberal teachers who are part of the very, very extreme Washington Education Association. And so this guy ties it to fascism. In fact, you should go out there and just, as teenagers, sleep with a bunch of people in the name of fighting fascism. It's essentially what he's saying here, right? And that it's slut-shaming, it's regressive, it's pseudoscientific. In fascist propaganda, to warn kids about the dangers of too many sexual partners, it's dangerous for adults to have too many sexual partners. How is that pseudoscientific? It's just a fact. The more people you sleep with, the more sexual partners you have, the greater risk you're at for some sort of sexually transmitted disease. That's not pseudoscientific. If I sleep with one person versus if I sleep with 1,000 people, I probably have a higher risk exposure, don't you think? And now that's fascist propaganda. And it would be bad enough if he was writing something like this for adults to consume. But he's writing something like this. It's picked up by the entity in charge of our public school system, and then it's disseminated to every single teacher and staff member in the entire state of Washington across all public school districts. But of course, if you go back to the first, Nicole, the email, oh, but they said in the email before that, resources are provided for informational purposes. Oh, okay. It's not as recommendations. Resources referenced here may be for educators or parents and may not be intended for use in the classroom. We recommend reviewing all of this for alignment with district policy and state law. Again, why don't you review it for alignment with state law, Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction? Why don't you review it for appropriateness before you send it out to thousands of public school teachers who might use it to tell kids that it's perfectly fine to sleep with as many people as they want to sleep with, and the crazy doesn't end there? Because if a teacher decided to follow these links and read these things, and they clicked on the link that was provided by the state that says it's bananas to tell kids it's a fascist propaganda to tell kids that body count matters and they should just sleep with as many people as they want to and it's not a big deal. When we were reading that article, we noticed that right below it was a link to an article from the same guy. So again, it's one step removed. Click on the link in the OSPI email, brings you to the weird bananas thing, and then right below it, you could click on a link to this. Happy Anal August. I mean, plug your kids' ears, please. What the fuck? Happy Anal August, how our juiciest queer-coded health campaigns are serving more bounce per ounce. Leaving flat slogans behind for contents that's cheekier, robust, and real. Again, teen health, Healthy Teen Network, says Test Where You Play, has a graphic that has donuts, urging teens to experiment where they play, urging teens to have anal sex. What you need to know about anal STI testing, you'll test with a swab like a COVID test, but for your butt. Do it yourself in the bathroom. This is the kind of stuff and the kind of author and the kind of organization that the head of the Washington Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, the man in charge of our entire public education system, believes is perfectly appropriate to disseminate to every public school teacher in the state of Washington. And I would ask again, somebody please, what's the motivation? Because I'm really struggling with that. I want to understand why people do things. It's not enough to just judge, right? And to comment on, like, this is blatantly ridiculous and dangerous, frankly. It's like creating the future OnlyFans content creators of America by telling them, sleep with as many people as you want. Try anal sex. But what is the motive for so many of these woke ideological agendas that filter into our public education system? I can identify the motive like that. I can't identify the motive beyond they're a bunch of perverts. And I don't want that to be the motive. I don't want it to be the motive. And I promised some people on social media who were, I invited my haters to ask me questions on social media the other day and provide me some feedback. And some of it was good and some of it was stupid, but some of it was good. And I heard from a lot of public school teachers that said, look, I wish you wouldn't lump us all in with the crazy. A lot of us aren't crazy. And I do believe that. And if I don't do a good enough job saying that, I'm sorry. I do believe that the vast majority of teachers in our state are doing a good job, aren't trying to teach kids to have anal sex and that as many sexual partners as they want, it's no big deal, aren't trying to push their personal politics on kids. I do believe that. But I need you to speak up. I need you to leave the union. Because the Washington Education Association is all about stuff like this. You shouldn't be paying union dues. You shouldn't be giving them a dime of your money from your paycheck. And for those same teachers who urged me to be a little more nuanced in my conversations about public education, then I need you to be on my side. I need you to be standing up and standing against things like this. I need you to be emailing your district. I need you to be emailing Chris Reichtel, the superintendent of public instruction, saying, why are you emailing this stuff out to districts? Even if you put a little asterisk that says, may not be in alignment with state law or district policy or our sex ed curriculum, might not be suitable for kids, then don't send it out. That doesn't absolve you of anything. So I don't believe everybody in our public education system is crazy, but I'll tell you what, a lot of the sane people are pretty damn quiet when it comes to crazy stuff like this. Wild. All right, coming up next, we'll get to the story we were going to lead with this show with. Trump once again threatening to perhaps pull the World Cup from Seattle in 2026. First, our newest advertisers to Undivided, Valentine Roofing, has been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for the third year in a row. And that's because they have exceptional service, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and a team that always goes the extra mile. And they don't just do roofs, by the way. Right now is a great time to get your custom holiday lighting up. They can work with you on what you want it to look like, colors, all that stuff, then come out and do all the hard work for you, which sounds great. And then, of course, the main thing that they do at Valentine Roofing is roofing. So whether you're not sure if you need a new roof, maybe you've got a leak or something, they'll come out, they'll take a look at your roof. If it can be repaired, they're going to repair it. They're not going to push you into buying a new roof. But if it's time and you do need a new roof, you can rest assured knowing your new roof will have a lifetime warranty. They also have flexible financing options, including zero down and 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, 206-ROOFING. And please tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. Very important to do business with people who do business with us. All right, President Donald Trump once again is suggesting that maybe some of the U.S. cities that are slated to host World Cup games in 2026 are unsafe. So he was asked about the new socialist mayor-elect of Seattle, Katie Wilson, and how that might factor into previous threats he's made about pulling the World Cup.
The new mayor-elect of Seattle is a Democratic socialist. Seattle has
six, or beyond. I watch that.
Right, Seattle has
that's,
six,
that's more than socialism.
Right, Seattle has six World Cup games. How close are you going to be watching that city with the crime?
If we think there's going to be a sign of any trouble, I would ask Johnny to move that to a different city. We have a lot of cities that are would love to have it number one, and we'll do it very safely. So if we think there's a problem in Seattle where you have a very, very liberal/communist mayor, I would say, you know, it's certainly beyond just liberal. I watched her over the weekend. Wow, that's another beauty we got there. But if we think there's going to be a problem, we'll, Johnny, can I say we will move? I don't think you're going to have this problem, but we're going to move the event to someplace where it's going to be appreciated and safe.
Yeah, well, I think safety and security is the number one priority for a successful World Cup.
I also just laugh at. So he said, oh, I saw Katie Wilson speaking. What a beauty there. And the Seattle media took it literally. Like, Como News did a story suggesting he was commenting on her looks. No, he was clearly making a sarcastic remark about yet another socialist. Like, oh, that's a real winner there. Just ridiculous. Now, when he called me very attractive, that was not sarcasm. I want to be clear and differentiate. My compliment I got from the president was sincere, I think. But I don't really think, and I'm just going to put my stake in the ground here, the president and the White House are not going to move the World Cup. It's really too late at this point. And when are you going to move it? I mean, you move it in January, you're like months away. Could you get another city ready to host the World Cup? He's been threatening this for a couple months, though. Here's a clip of him from the end of September.
No, if any city we think is going to be even a little bit dangerous for the World Cup or for the Olympics, you know, where they have Olympic overthrow, right? But for the World Cup in particular, because they're playing in so many cities, we won't allow it to go to, we'll move it around a little bit. But I hope that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think he's just putting them on notice that, like, you know, get it together. We want to put a good foot forward. And so we expect you to take your public safety issues seriously and resolve them before the World Cup. I don't really think it's feasible to move it at this point unless there's some substantial issue that comes up. The Seattle World Cup Committee put out a statement to Como News. They said, "We're working lockstep with the White House task force. We're working at every level of government, local, state, national, even international, on the border to make sure this event comes off as the best event ever. And so we're super pleased with how it's all going." And they said they were just in D.C. They're working with the administration to make sure that it goes off without a hitch. Bruce Harrell, who's still going to be mayor for at least another month or so, said President Trump's comments about moving the 2026 World Cup out of Seattle once again display his ignorance about our city and what we stand for. The safety of residents and visitors to Seattle is always a top concern of our administration. I disagree. I mean, I think Bruce Harrell has cared more about public safety than some mayors, and I think he cares a hell of a lot more about public safety than the incoming mayor, Katie Wilson. Apparently, though, she has already reached out and had reached out proactively to the Seattle World Cup Committee, you know, to work with them. But again, so a couple things here, and I'm going to get to our daily subscriber show poll on this in a second to get your guys' thoughts on whether you think Seattle really does have enough public safety concerns to warrant this. The World Cup has been played around the world in some pretty rough places, in some pretty rough cities. So to act as if Seattle is the roughest place or the most concerning place from a public safety perspective that the World Cup could be played, and you have people coming from third world countries to watch it, I think that they'll think Seattle is just fine. Now, does Seattle have some serious public safety issues that have gone unaddressed and have gotten worse for years and years and years? Yes. Do we expect that Seattle, which calls itself a world-class city in a first world country and the greatest country on earth, do we want to put our best foot forward? Absolutely. Should there be people dying of fentanyl overdoses in the storefronts downtown? Should there be human feces that World Cup fans have to step over? Should there be tents and crime and people in midst of mental health emergencies freaking messing with fans? No, of course not. We need to get all of that figured out. And what I don't want to see, in which I think will probably be what happens, because it's what happened before the All-Star game, they're going to go in there and sweep it all out and have a big police presence for like 2 weeks before and maybe a couple days after while everyone travels home. And then the rest of us poor schmucks who actually have to live here and work here are going to be back to business as usual within probably a week of the World Cup leaving. And that's unacceptable. We shouldn't be talking about improving public safety at some rapid clip only before a major event happens here. Now, one of the things that I will say, just in the interest of pointing out hypocrisy, is that earlier this year, leading Democrats in Washington state were the ones saying that Seattle was not safe to host the World Cup.
I'll just add, you know, this could have been an event that would have been incredible for the state of Washington. But what is happening at the federal level, people don't want to come to the United States of America. So it's going to be interesting for me to see who actually shows up and where they come from. But it is not safe for people from other countries to come to the United States right now, because people are literally being picked up from the streets and taken away.
She said it. That's a Democrat, Senator Monica Dingra. It's literally not safe. So Trump is saying it's not safe. Democrats freak out. Monica Dingra says it's not safe for people to come here. Crickets. It's because she's saying that it's not safe because of Trump's immigration enforcement. Now, I don't want Seattle to lose the World Cup. I think our businesses more than ever really need the economic impact that the World Cup will have. I have a lot of concerns, though, about the state of things in Seattle, especially when we get the new socialist police abolitionist mayor in. I'm very worried about where things will be and the safety of people attending and the opportunity we have to embarrass ourselves on the world stage. But I'm hopeful that the World Cup goes forward without any issues at all and that it's a wonderful, fantastic experience. Now, I do wonder, though, if there's an argument to be made for the Trump administration in the interest of them carrying out their immigration enforcement and trying to improve our nation's immigration laws. I wonder if there's an opportunity for them to genuinely use the World Cup as leverage. I've heard some people suggest that the World Cup should not be able to take place in cities that are sanctuary cities. Now, if that's the argument the Trump administration were making, I might agree with that. And I hate to say that because I want Seattle to benefit from it economically. But there is so much that's detrimental to having a sanctuary city. I mean, I think Trump would be within his right to say, hey, if you are a sanctuary jurisdiction, you're not allowed to host the World Cup. Now, he probably should have said it like, you know, 7 months ago. But I wonder if that's something that people would, you know, who agree with that issue might be more open to. It's like pull the World Cup from cities in states that are sanctuary jurisdictions. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll. I want to move that up on the show today. Is Seattle safe enough to host the 2026 World Cup, in your estimation? Yes or no? Nicole, yes or no?
Yes. Very much so.
All right. Oh, wow. Look at you know what? The Katie Wilson and the mayor, Bruce Harrell, are probably going to use this clip of the show saying, even Brandy and Nicole say.
Well, you know, Seattle, we haven't even had a month of Katie Wilson. So who knows what I would say a year from now after we've had a good year of Katie Wilson.
Yeah.
But yeah, as of now, yes, it's safe enough.
Yes, I agree too. And only because like every city is going to have some issues. Seattle has more than most. But again, you're talking about people coming in from third world nations in many instances. The World Cup has been played in some really rough places. Dan Mead Smith says, of course it is. Successful World Cup this summer. Needless controversy. Pat Caldwell says the rush to clean will blow minds. Yeah, that's very true. Kathy says this new mayor is just going to make it worse. Bookworm, I guess safe enough in comparison with other venues. Pleasant for visitors is another thing altogether. I know someone who works downtown with cruise tourists a lot. The most common comment is I'd never come back. Randall, they will have to strip law enforcement from the surrounding areas and put them downtown. Oh, 100%. They're going to bring in mutual aid. I don't know if that's a reflection of Seattle being that unsafe, but just the number of people being in Seattle for a major event, they're going to have mutual aid from other jurisdictions. Let's see here. Pinky X, I voted yes because they will clean it up and keep the tourist areas policed and safe. And with only 7 months to go, how much damage can the socialists do? Be careful in saying that. Most of you, by the way, 40%. Oh, let me get this right. Yeah, it's about 40-60. 40% of you are saying yes. 60% are saying no. Nicole and I both say yes. I definitely.
All these people that say no. I think you just don't trust. But which I'm not. That's not to say that there are some things that could happen, because I do believe there are probably some bad things that will happen. Yeah, like cars will get broken into. Well, things like that will happen.
We've had stabbings and shootings down on the new waterfront. There's one of the concerns I have about Seattle is the amount of random acts of violence. Mm-hmm. You know, in Chicago, you've got a lot of gang violence, right? So like more or less, if you aren't in a gang or you avoid the areas where there's gang activity, more or less, I'm not saying there isn't acts of violence there, you're going to be safe. But in Seattle, we've had so many of these really heartbreaking random instances of violence because there's such a mental health crisis and a drug crisis going on. So there definitely needs to be a lot of police in the area. Todd Welch says, Seattle's safety profile has improved in recent years, making it a viable host for a global event like the World Cup. I don't know. I disagree with that assertion. I think the homeless crisis has gotten worse. And so the homelessness and the drug aspect and the mental health crisis, to me, I don't know if I agree with the notion that it's improved significantly in recent years. But then you say there are challenges that still persist, Chinatown, International District, common areas like Belltown. I agree. So again, I mean, we said I don't want to see them come in and just clean it up ahead of the All-Star game. That's what they did. They moved the tents down a little bit to Soto. Then the tents came back. That shouldn't be considered a strategy. That shouldn't be considered leadership, to just sweep it out of the way for the World Cup. And yet that's what we allow them to do. And then we vote people in who want to defund the police.
Right.
I mean, literally, Katie Wilson is not just a police defunder. She wants to abolish police. She advocated for police abolition.
Right.
And now she's going to rely on the police to keep the city safe for this huge event.
And it will be interesting to see what happens over the next 6 to 9 months as the feds have pulled funding from Housing First policies.
Yep.
So do we shift so we can get some of that funding and put it into treatment, or do they do without that funding and we have more people
and
on
revolt.
The street?
Yep. It's not going to be good.
So it could get real interesting in the next 6 to 9 months.
So accountability is key. We have to hold the city accountable. They need to actually improve the scenario, not just for the World Cup. And I'll also just note about Katie Wilson, and I'll probably do another segment on this at some point. Police abolitionist now gets a Seattle police security detail. Yeah, a little the irony there. This is someone who, for the rest of you, security for me, but not for thee. For the rest of you, wanted police to be abolished, wanted to move toward a future without the Seattle Police Department. But now she's going to get an armed Seattle Police security detail as the mayor. She was also a transit activist. I hate cars. We want everyone in transit. Guess who's going to be driven around by her security detail in a gas-guzzling SUV? Katie Wilson. Oh, help the poor, help the blah, 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 working class. Now she's going to be upper middle class overnight, $300,000 salary. Is she going to give some of it back and take just a working person's salary? If she weren't a hypocrite, she'd do three things. She would refuse to take an armed Seattle police security detail and would instead be escorted around by unarmed social workers. She would, number two, decline to be driven around in an SUV or in any sort of vehicle and would take public transit to and from work. And number three, she would refuse to take the $300,000 and would instead only take home a working person's salary and would donate the rest to charity. Will she do any of those three? I think she suggested to some maybe that she might not take the full salary. I highly doubt it.
Well, she cut off her parents this morning.
Yeah,
she tweeted that she was no longer going to take money from her parents because she was taking a job that she was offered.
You mean the mayor's?
The mayor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But will she give up some of that salary? Because again, we're talking about hypocrisy. If you think that, oh, too much wealth in people's hands, $300,000 a year, even in Seattle, does make you upper middle class. And so, I don't know. We'll see if she's a hypocrite or not. It was funny. I had somebody pushing back against me, like, she needs that security detail because of people like you. And I go, interesting. So what specifically would the security detail help her with? Well, what specific role would that armed security SPD detail play? And I wanted them to say, well, to keep her safe. Oh, so you're saying cops keep people safe? Interesting. All right, we'll move on to our segment, Unbelievable. Going to talk about sex predators again. Good God, there's just too much content around that. First, we get fantastic feedback from you guys about First Mark Insurance. If you're not a member of the First Mark family yet, and you've been hearing me talk about it for some time, just take the first step of doing the First Mark Challenge. You just call them. You go over your current insurance, your insurance needs. Maybe you have some changes. You know, we often have people who decide to take the First Mark Challenge because they hear that they're being dropped from a carrier or they've had some big claim and their carrier has dropped them. But really, any time is a good time to take the First Mark Challenge. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers for you. They'll come back with their recommendations. We got a great email recently from Christine, and she has a tough insurance situation. She's got two businesses, her house, and then they've got three cars. I think they just added a third car for a teen driver. And she got news that their carrier was dissolving. And so she's panicking. She calls First Mark finally. They saved her $10,000 a year on the two businesses, the home, the three cars. $10,000 a year, you guys. Man, if you're not part of the First Mark family yet, consider becoming one. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind, and you never pay them a dime. You never pay them a dime. With that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Again, I struggle with the motivation on this. I struggle with the motivation beyond you're just trying to help predators. You're just trying to help sex predators. Why are Democrats in Olympia so obsessed with trying to reduce punishments for child sex predators? Why? I don't understand. And look, all the things, maybe you're like, oh, we've got this world-class new treatment thing or whatever it is, and we need to reevaluate. All these other things we have going on, this is their priority. It's so bizarre. So there's a story out from the Center Square that a Washington State commission is now favoring sentencing alternatives for sex sting offenders specifically. So the Sex Offender Policy Board has been pushing for this now for a couple years. This from the Center Square. The Washington State Sentencing Guidelines Commission has voted 7-2-3, 7 in favor, 2 against, 3 abstained, to recommend a policy to the legislature that would provide alternative sentencing for certain sex offenses that do not involve a real victim, such as those in sting operations. In 2022, the board submitted a report to the state legislature that argued, quote, based on the review of research and the effectiveness of treatment alternatives for individuals who commit sexual offenses, as well as the lowered costs associated with diverting individuals from prison while still holding them accountable for their actions, we recommend that a new treatment alternative should be created to expand treatment services to low-risk individuals. Low risk. who have committed certain sexual offenses. Among those offenses is internet sexting operations and other sex offenses with no identifiable victim. So there's a lot that I'm going to get to in the way of kind of some background on this specific issue. But can I just state for the record, this always bothers me. The only time Democrats seem to care about saving money is when it comes to letting people out of prison. They always, whenever they want to reduce sentences, early release, expand pardons or whatever commutations, they always cite, this will save us money. No other issue. No other issue do they care about saving money, lowering taxes, none. But they use it as an excuse because they're trying to get people to buy into it. They use it as a rationale not to send sex predators to prison. Do we understand that? So disingenuous. So they're talking about the board is going to recommend to the legislature, hey, let's do sentencing alternatives for low-risk individuals with no identifiable victim relating to sex stings. So in Washington state, we have something called net nanny operations. I've had the, I would call it a privilege, but it was actually quite sad and depressing. I had the opportunity several years ago when I was a TV news reporter to spend time with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. And God, the work they do is heartbreaking. And what they're trying to do is basically have these stings that capture similar to like all of Chris Hansen to catch a predator. It's like we want to catch child predators before they actually hurt a child. And so they have these net nanny operations where they go out, they post these listings that are essentially offering sex with a minor, and then they wait and see who responds. And then the person will show up thinking that they're going to have sex with a minor, rape a minor, and that's when they're arrested. In the eyes of Democrats and the sentencing board, well, it's not a real victim. So it's not so bad. So they're low risk. Now, this is not the first time we've talked about this issue. You'll remember just this past legislative session, Senator Lisa Wellman introduced Senate Bill 5312, which would lower punishments for certain child sex predators. Specifically, it was an act relating to net nanny operations involving fictitious minors. And so what she wanted to do was lower punishments specific to people who are caught up in these net nanny stings. I went back and I pulled her testimony because this was heard by the Senate Public Safety Committee. And first of all, I was listening to it and I was just blown away by how she started her testimony to the committee.
I'm here for the 1.5 million kiddos in our state from birth through 12th grade and making sure that they have what they need to thrive and being safe and not being available, not being caught up, not being having predators take their childhood away from them in some horrible ways. I mean, is really what we're about today with these two bills.
So she's introducing this bill and another similar bill. And she starts her testimony by saying that she is there to look out for the safety of the 1.2 million Washington kids. Man, what a gaslighter. It's just wild. And then she goes on to tell the story of a constituent who is caught up in one of these net nanny stings after expressing interest in an ad on Craigslist.
He's never talking to a child. In fact, he's not even driving the conversation. In a review of the transcripts of all the conversations that took place in this particular sting operation, the conversation is initiated and controlled by the state police officer over 90% of the time. And the officer calls back repeatedly over the weekend. My constituent is not making the calls. He is called back 7 or 8 times until on Sunday he agrees to go, meet up, goes to a house and is arrested. And I guess what I'm asking in this bill is this, and it's very specific. It's not a holistic kind of whitewashing or anything. It's saying with no prior record of any wrongdoing with a child, with nothing on your computer, in your home, in your background, all have been scrutinized by the police. And if that's the case, that there's nothing that even suggests you're interested in sexual activity with a child, and now you've served your time in prison. Shouldn't there come a time when you can live a life and know for certain that that time can come?
Okay, so she starts her testimony by saying, I'm here to protect kids. And then she talks about a constituent who responded to a Craigslist ad, but it was a fictitious minor situation, and his life shouldn't be ruined over it, and he shouldn't have to be on like a sex offender registry for the rest of his life. Just very strange there. But of course, if you're familiar, that story got even stranger because it turned out that Senator Wellman had a connection, a personal connection, with the father of that constituent. Our friend Jason Rance broke this story a few months ago. Democratic senator pushed softer child crime, sex crime penalties to help a friend with a predator son. So she had partnered with a constituent, the father of a convicted child sex predator, to push legislation that would dismantle the very online sting operations that put his son in prison. What she didn't publicly disclose was that the constituent appears to be her close personal friend. Text messages and emails exclusively obtained by the Jason Rance show reveal Wellman worked extensively with Bruce Glant, whose son, Brian Earl Glant, was convicted in April 2018 on two counts of attempted first-degree rape of a child. The charges stemmed from a 2016 net nanny sting. And now keep in mind, she basically says that if it's a fictitious minor, this isn't such a big deal. He was 20 at the time, according to court documents. Brian Glant believed he was meeting with a mother, offering her 6 and 11-year-old daughters and 13-year-old son for sex. According to court documents, Glant's son had responded to a Craigslist advertisement that was titled, forgive me, Family Playtime. The post said, mommy daughter, daddy son, mommy son, you get the drift. If you know what I'm talking about, hit me up. We'll chat more about what I have to offer you. That is the kind of thing that these sickos are responding to. And he believes, whether it's a fictitious minor or not, that man believed that he was coming somewhere to meet a mom who was going to sell him her 6 and 11-year-old daughters for sex and her 13-year-old son for sex. And what did Senator Wellman say about someone like that?
That there's nothing that even suggests you're interested in sexual activity with a child.
Yeah, nothing that even suggested, because there wasn't a real child there. There wasn't a real child there. It was just an internet fantasy. And who does she say she stands up for?
I'm here for the 1.5 million kiddos in our state from birth through 12th grade.
Just not the ones whose innocence are saved by the net nanny stings that get predators off the streets before they can actually hurt a real child. Absolutely disgusting. And now, because that bill didn't advance in Olympia, because she didn't get what she wanted for her friend's son, and to protect other just innocent people responding to Craigslist ads called Family Playtime, now the sentencing board is going to do it for her. It's really disgusting stuff. And again, what is the motivation? What is the motivation behind it? Unbelievable. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next, including efforts to dismantle the Department of Ed. We just got an update on that. And how are teachers' unions spending their money? There's some new information out that may or may not surprise you. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Linda H. did. She gave him 5 stars. It says, it was difficult for me to put my trust into a real estate agent only because this was the first home I'd sold and I needed it to be handled with care and respect. I interviewed 2 other agents. Wes was the third and the last. During our first meeting, I knew it was clear this man knew more about how to position my home for a successful sale than the others did. We put our home on the market at one of the worst times of the year. Also, during a slow market, we had expectations of it taking many months. With Wes and his team's expertise, it sold in under a month. Trusting him was easy. Working with him and his team was a great experience. So if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using his home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. Just because we started the show on such a low note, talking about the state of our public education system, just this afternoon, this from CNBC, the Trump Department of Education announced further steps it's taking to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. So they announced that they are going to transfer much of the U.S. Department of Ed programming into other agencies. So this obviously is part of their efforts to sort of dismantle the beast of the Department of Education. During a press call with reporters today, a senior administration official said the Trump White House had signed agreements with four other federal agencies, including the U.S. Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, to begin managing programs that are currently housed under the Education Department. Under those new agreements, the Labor Department will administer more federal K-12 initiatives, and the State Department will assume additional tasks related to international education and the Fulbright programs, according to the Education Department. So, well, what reason will people find to be angry about that, right? So if you're concerned, oh my gosh, the Department of Education does such important work, we can't dismantle it. Okay, well, what if we just give some of those jobs to other agencies? So like some of that work's still being done, right? It's just done by a different agency. Nope, got to melt down anyway. Got to find a reason to be very, very angry about it. Which also cracks me up because these blue states like ours, they don't want Trump to touch our education system with a 2,000-foot pole. 2,000-mile pole would probably be more appropriate. Probably like 2,000 miles to the White House. They don't want him to have anything to do with our education system. You do realize that dissolving the U.S. Department of Education would give more power and control to the states, right? You do understand that, but no, you just can't like anything that Trump does. And a lot of this has to do with the teachers' unions. And really, the Department of Education, the U.S. Department of Education, was built for the teachers' union on their behalf as basically a gift to them. There's this fascinating information out today from Corey DeAngelis. We've had him on the show before. He calls himself a school choice evangelist. He got data on how the nation's largest teachers' union, the National Education Association, spent its funding last year. So first of all, $431 million is how much the NEA spent last year. Holy smokes, $500 million by the National Education Association. Guess how much of that went to helping their members, representing their members, doing what a union is supposed to do? 9%. About $40 million went to what they characterize in tax documents as representational activities. Only 9% of everything they spent last year went to actually representing their members. So what did the rest go to? Well, political activities and lobbying, contributions, gifts and grants, union administration, strike benefits, supplies for resale, purchase of investments and fixed assets. I mean, on and on and on and on. And you know so much of that whining and dining and unnecessary trips. 9% actually spent on representing their members. That should tell you a lot about the teachers' unions. And again, the very best thing that could happen nationally and to individual states is for the teachers' unions to go bankrupt. And look in Washington State, all the nonsense they spend your dues on. So if you're a sane teacher, there is no way in hell that you should be a member of the union any longer. Reach out to your local union representative for your district, tell them, and don't break to pressure. Don't bow to pressure. Tell them, I want to get out of the union. Give me the paperwork I need to do that. And I want it today. And they're going to try to shame you and guilt you. And, oh, well, that's very important. We won't be able to do this work without you. And just say, I don't care. And tell them why. And tell them why you don't want to be a member of the union anymore. All right. The socialist bug has caught on. New York City, Seattle, and maybe soon Los Angeles. This from the Center Square, California. Socialist candidate runs against Los Angeles mayor. And for the record, could they be any worse than Karen Bass? Probably not. And at this point, I really do believe that modern day progressives and even some liberal Democrats in cities like LA and Seattle and Portland, they're basically socialists. You look at all the kind of free, quote unquote, programs that they push and that they support and that they vote for. I mean, in Washington State, we passed rent control. We passed reparations. We passed pay for striking workers. We passed benefits, including legal benefits for illegal aliens. That's socialist stuff. So they can call themselves Democrats, but they're pushing socialist policies. So, you know, a rose by any other name. It says a trend of socialist mayoral candidates in the nation's biggest cities is continuing, with housing advocate Ray Chen Huang's candidacy against Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. Huang, a senior organizer with the Housing Now! California Coalition, announced her candidacy Saturday on Instagram. Huang followed up with a campaign rally Sunday in downtown LA, where the ordained Presbyterian minister called for making housing affordable for everyone and providing free mass transit. There it is. It's one of the first things the socialists always want. Free mass transit. And of course, it's not free. None of it's free. It'll never be free. And when you make it free, it instantly becomes shittier overnight, because then you've got all the people who are riding around as a drug den. She said, "We are going to make sure that wages and work are dignified," said Huang, a member of the board of Creating Justice, an organization promoting economic justice for the homeless people living on Los Angeles's Skid Row. What does economic justice for a homeless drug addict look like? What does that look like? I feel like the only sort of justice they need is some drug treatment and some help and an ability and a chance to turn their lives around. I don't know what economic justice means. They just attach the word justice to everything. What is the, or equity? It's like justice or equity. Remember that we did the story the other day on clothing equity? How women's clothing didn't have pockets because they weren't allowed to own and carry around things, and their men controlled the purse strings. They couldn't even have pockets to put money in. And there was this webinar, like, hosted by tax, paid for by taxpayers, about clothing equity and clothing justice. Anything that has equity or justice attached to it, I'm like, just no thank you. All right. President Donald Trump says he is going to make everyone reapply for SNAP benefits. Oh, maybe they're not going to like that. From Fox Business, all SNAP recipients required to reapply as Trump administration cracks down on fraud, saying the business as usual is over. So Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins said that they've requested data from states on recipients and started checking it. Here's what they found.
186,000 deceased individuals receiving benefits. 500,000 people getting more than two times the benefit. So they're getting it in one place and then they're getting it in another place. The same person. We found thousands of individuals that were getting benefits in three to four or five, six different states. I mean, it is one thing after another. And this is just from the red states. Can you imagine when we get through litigation and we get that data from California, New York, Oregon? We know under Biden, the program increased 40%. Of course, we believe they were trying to buy the election by pushing more and more money out without any accountability.
Crazy. That's just the red states. Because the red states are like, yeah, take a look. We don't want fraud and waste of the program and abuse of the program. Take a look. So the blue states won't even give the data. Gosh, really similar how the blue states won't give the data on the voter rolls. They won't give the data on the SNAP benefits. Won't give the data on the voter rolls. Because they know that there's fraud and waste and abuse. And they don't want the Trump administration to uncover it. It's just wild to me because, yeah, if the red states you're seeing that much fraud and waste, the blue states is going to be through the roof. And again, it should be another non-controversial thing. I'm not saying that you make people jump through hoops every single time, like every month or every year, to re-up their SNAP benefits. Make it reasonable. Make it doable. But at the end of the day, there have to be checks and balances, and they have to meet eligibility standards. They can't be double, triple, quadruple dipping in different states. It's not controversial stuff. It's your money. It's my money. It's our money. We want to make sure that it's being used appropriately. All right, we'll get to comments from you crazy fellas in the live chat first. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord in Washington State, another reminder to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. It's $260 a year-ish. I think it's 260, maybe some change on that. But it's a great organization. First of all, they're going to have your back in Olympia down there advocating, and really not just during the session, but year round, for your interests, making sure that lawmakers are considering your side of things when they're pushing new policies. And then, of course, this is a complex world to be a housing provider in. A lot of rules, regulations, new laws every single year. So you want to make sure that you're following everything so you don't run afoul of old Nick Brown and Bobby Fergie Ferguson. So they can help you navigate the complex world of housing, of providing housing, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And also, they are inviting you, anyone really who's interested in housing policy or just wants a good political gala to go to in December. They're hosting their 2025 holiday gala December 13th in Seattle. They got a great winter theme. Looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So you can sign up for that at rhawa.org as well. All right, comments on the opening segment on sex ed and body count. That's just propaganda from the fascists. Bill Swick, it is obvious to me that liberals in every arena are trying, along with the gender ideology, to normalize pedophilia in schools, youth facilities, and now in the general population. Yeah, and I saw this really great. It's from Old Sub Sailor, $20 Super Chat. It all seems to be an effort to remove foundational moral boundaries. This and all the brainwashing that is already happening in schools, it's all related to changing the nature of our society to promote division and change. And you might be onto something there. Removing the foundational moral boundaries. And sort of, we talked about this a lot with kind of trying to break up the nuclear family or make it seem like the nuclear family is inherently problematic. And so, you know, why not create like sex-crazed demon children running around becoming OnlyFans models and stuff? So maybe that is really what it's about, is just having this, you know, blurring the lines between right and wrong. Just wild. And for the record, adults, have sex with as many people as you'd like. You do you, you know. I'm not going to body shame or what they call it, slut shame or whatever it is. Doesn't mean you shouldn't know and be up to date on the potential problems with that. And it doesn't mean we should be telling kids to do that, you know. Just my opinion. Call me controversial. Call me crazy. On the World Cup, Van says, well, let's see what happens when Europe's soccer hooligans meet Seattle's Antifa. Yeah, maybe Europe's soccer hooligans and, frankly, Central America's soccer hooligans, maybe they'll beat up Antifa. I love that. I just feel like our Seattle, because the fans mm-hmm. call themselves anti-fascist. They wave the anti-fascist flag at Sounders games. So, you know, they're pretty like weakling Seattle man bun types. So they meet some real soccer fans.
Yeah.
Brass knuckles and stuff. Not going to be pretty for them. Don't bring brass knuckles into the World Cup games.
I mean, some people mentioned it in comments. I'm not sure if we grabbed them, but those tickets are expensive. Oh, yeah. So there's no average people going to that game. It's for the elite, I think.
Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, I guess they're trying to raffle off and try to get mm-hmm. some regular folks in there, but it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. What do you want to bet that the mayor of Seattle is up in a box?
Our new elite mayor.
Our new elite mayor is up in a box, you know, protected by our SPD security detail. Right. All right. For the record, if I ever get elected to anything, I will absolutely have a security detail, and I will not be a hypocrite because I've always been a fan of the police.
Yeah.
And I will not probably turn down any of the money from my salary. I'm going to take it all. Yeah, that's fine. Because I also love capitalism. It's fine.
You'll invest it.
Yeah, Jules J, I think the homeless situation is less in our faces, like when it was, there was a big boom of homelessness around the state where they were building shacks on the side of the freeway. Yeah, I mean, I do think they've tried to get a little bit better at clearing the right-of-ways, even though they've done it at great expense to the state. We did an exclusive on that a couple years ago. They were spending like $1 million per person to remove them from state highway right-of-ways. Just insane. Mm-hmm. Observer says Seattle doesn't deserve... Seattle doesn't deserve a pudding cup.
I know.
On a World Cup. It's become trash. Places I walked in Seattle just 20 years ago, I wouldn't step foot in. That's funny.
That's funny.
Seattle. I did have to laugh at, we were at a canine foundation, Snohomish County Canine Foundation, mm-hmm. which we just love, over the weekend. And one of the auction items was a trip to Seattle, like for a 2-night kind of romantic getaway to Seattle. Nice restaurant, gift card, and hotel. And I was like, we're in a room in Snohomish County. How much are people going to bid on this? It might go for zero. It actually got bid on by a nice older couple. And so I hope they have a very safe, enjoyable time. Weisscastle, I was in Paris when France won the World Cup. I was not scared before, but that was a very scary night. I mean, I was here and I was reporting at the time when we won, was it the Super Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like breaking stuff down in Pioneer Square and lighting fires, and police ended up coming in and clearing them out.
But it is a little scary. So yeah, they better have things on hand.
But you got booze, you got excitement, testosterone, not a lot of testosterone in Seattle, but I'm sure some of the visiting guests will have enough testosterone, you know, and the transgender crowd probably has some extra shots that they can bring in to help boost people up. Mean Prandy, stop. Stop it. Undivided. Stop it.
Spare testosterone.
Hey, man. I want to go riot. You got any of those spare testosterone injections? Upper Sky. Even with all the federal grant money for public safety, there are still issues that SPD aren't ready for and that they don't have enough people for, frankly. And you know how many, think of how many officers left during the police defunding debate. You don't think that officers are planning their exit strategy given that a abolition socialist is going to be their boss. Their boss. Yeah, they're going to be down even further by the time the World Cup gets here. All right, on the predators and the efforts to lower punishments, Lockman says this lady and Goodman are cut from the same cloth. Yeah, why are the wackiest ones on the public safety committees? Why do the wackiest ones get put on the public safety committees? It's so strange.
I just can't figure out. No one has any good reason for defending these people other than, like, I mean, that guy normalizing this behavior. But I don't, the sex predator thing, I mean, other than defending your friend, again,
I would never do that. My constituent, if my friend came to me and said, hey, can you, I'd be like, no.
I would disown you as a friend.
I'm like, you think I'm going to put my political capital into helping your pedophile son?
No.
Absolutely not. Little Miss J said, Brandy, I'm interested in where these studies were made and who funded them. Something doesn't feel right. So, because they said a study told them that the best thing to do is not to put these people in prison.
Oh,
like, yeah, who's that study from? Probably the Washington Education Association. It's all sort of tied together.
Well, it's all based on money. So they just say it's cheaper than having people in lifetime.
Right, but they don't care about money. So that's a lie.
I know. That's the only time they care. Because, yeah, the lifetime being watched for a lifetime or whatever is a lot more expensive.
Yeah. Course. Matthew Cook, if you want to keep communities in the poverty cycle, encouraging behavior that leads to more unwed mothers and no fathers around is a great way. That might be a good motivator, is like, we want people absolutely dependent on the government. So young, unwed mom, reliant on the system. I mean, I know that's getting real deep.
I don't think it's that deep. I think that is the goal. I think that is 100%
anarchy,
part of
society,
the goal.
Yeah, just crazy.
Is to create this, you know, dependent on government forever. They can save you. Government can save you.
Let's see here. Don't pretend to know me. $10.35 super chat. Re-anal August. There's a significant segment of LGB purists, the sane crowd, who maintain that the plus is reserved for the MAPS, the minor attracted persons. In one way or another, everyone is in search of the fountain of youth. Wow, that was a dark, weird comment. I kind of didn't pre-read it before I read it. let me see here. Veronica, $20 super chat. For the swear jar, the F word is sometimes necessary. I did say cover your ears before I said it.
It's pretty messed up. It's pretty messed up. It's just gross.
Anthony Davis, thank you for your work, Brandy. These people are of their father, the devil. Body count is propaganda. They realize kids can't unsee or unhear. And then Rick has something to say about our show. He says, considering Miranda's new expanded role, the fact that the image at the end of the show still just says Florida Report is infuriating. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm working on that this week, actually.
Is there a typo in there?
No, Miranda, her thing says
her title says Florida Report
maybe?
She hasn't been hired.
Contributor. I think it says contributor.
Contributor. And she hasn't been hired full-time yet. That's January 1st. We'll change it on January 2nd. No, I'm just kidding. I think that's what you're talking about. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check, which is funny. In a second, first, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned with the risk exposure of your retirement portfolio? You probably should be at least curious about what the AI bubble might mean for it. Are you confident with how your portfolio is positioned for 2026? If the answer is yes, no, I don't know, who knows? You should still join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his review preview live webinar coming up this Thursday, November 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It is Bulwark's final webinar of the year. They'll discuss the impact AI is having on the market, preview for 2026, how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free November 20th webinar, schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review, and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. And the latest episode of Swamp Watch with our friend Zach Abraham dropped last night, so go check that out when you have some free time. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So Trump, President Trump, he's funny. He went to speak to the McDonald's convention. So McDonald's has like an annual conference or whatever, and they've got their people, their suppliers, their employees and management and all that stuff in there. So who better to speak to them than President Donald Trump?
I'm thrilled to be here with the men and the women who are really the heart and soul of one of the greatest, most admired, and most successful companies in the history of the world, frankly. The one and only McDonald's. I've gone there a couple of times. And I'm honored to stand before you as the very first former McDonald's fry cook ever to become president of the United States. And I actually was there for about 30 minutes, and that was 30 minutes longer than Kamala was there. Despite her job at McDonald's, that didn't work out too well.
I love how they all laugh about it, too. Gosh, that is good stuff. I love it. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A few last-minute super chats that came in. Brandy, I'm in. Oh, no, I already got that one. Let me see. Brandy. You're gonna make pee banks rich. Those that see fake pee for those tests. What does that mean? Pee banks? Oh, people need fake pee for tests.
I don't know. That's why I didn't put it in there.
Oh, okay. Catherine, I saw your messages.
Yeah, I noted
I'll
that
take
too.
A look. Okay, sorry. I just assumed Miranda wasn't here today. I assumed Nicole didn't do her job and she missed some super chats. But one of them was just weird, and she left it out. Become an Undivided subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. I really think that's about it. Hopefully we'll talk less about perverted stuff on the show tomorrow. But maybe not. I don't know. It is Washington State, after all.